Kill him, man.
My name is Kermit, and I'm an addict. I'm clean today through the grace of God and Narcotics Anonymous. I was going to go to court, but then I got high. Thank you. You know, when I heard that song, I said, you know, I'd love to hear people sing that in a convention. And then I thought, we should do the recovery version of that song, right? So you have a part here. And your part is, because I didn't get high, I didn't get high, I didn't get high. Okay? Now, I did this over in California 2 weeks ago, and all them white motherfuckers had no soul. So I want to hear this with some soul, okay? Let's practice this. Ready? Go. Yeah. Just three. Come on. Right? Addicts want more. I got up to clean my room because I didn't get high. I'll tell you when your part is, okay? Hadn't hocked the mop in the vacuum because I didn't get high. My house is immaculate. Yeah, that's a lie. Why? I paid all my back child support because I didn't get high. When sponsees are in trouble, it's the only time I go to court. Because I didn't get high. No legal marital or IRS problems, and you know why. Got my son back in recovery because I didn't get high. Most of my family's clean today because I didn't get high. I found the love of my life, and you know why. I have purpose in my life today because I didn't get high. I found a loving God today because I didn't get high. I picked up my double-digit coin, and you know why. Say what? One more time. Thanks. A moment of silence for me. My name is Kermit, and I'm an addict. In Spanish, it's me llamo Kermit, un adicto. In French, it's mon homme Kermit, je suis dépendant. We're dependents, right? In Hebrew, it's Kermit Mahur. In Turkish, it's Beni Adam Kermit Ben Bir Bulum Liam. In German, it's Ich heiße Kermit, ich bin süchtig. And the good one was in Greece, they told me, I said, how do you say my name's Kermit and I'm an addict? And he said, Milena Kermit Ime Narcomanis. I said, Narcomanis, what's that? He said, narcotic maniac. I identify. I was speaking in Hawaii, and there were some people from Japan, and I really wanted to say it, you know, and I said, go up to the girl, and I said, how do you say my name's Kermit in Japanese? And she went, I said, could you do a little shorter? She said, Yakachu. I said, okay, Yakachu Kermit. It's good. What's that? She said, narcotic. Narcotic Kermit. Yep. Uh, for the last 10 years, I've been saying, you know, my name's Kermit and I'm an addict from New York. And then I said, my name's Kermit and I'm an addict from Montgomery. And by the grace of God, in 3 weeks, I'll be able to say for the first time in 10 years that my name's Kermit and I'm an addict from Virginia. There's no place like home. There's no place like home. There's no place like home. I walked into my first 12-step meeting in August of 1979. I was put in a treatment center in Charlottesville, Virginia, and I was immediately put in what the well-dressed addict wears, blue pajamas. And I was in this treatment center for a few days, and there was folks in there who'd been there for 2 weeks, and you know when you're in treatment 2 weeks, you're well, right? And they sick you on the newcomers, right? So this little group of well folks, they came down the hall to get me, right? They were going to carry the light to me, right? And they said, we're going to go to this alcohol meeting. And I thought, great, you know, I'm a social chameleon. I can fit in anywhere. You tell me the game plan, right? So I went down the hall with this little group smiling, and we went down in one of these little rooms in the treatment center, and I had one of them crummy Formica tables, a couple of beat-up chairs, and, you know, it's a little different than this. I was 26 years old. I was singing in a new wave punk band, and I sat down in this room, and there was these, like, 40- and 50-year-old guys, and they had big red noses, and they had pot bellies out to here, and they're bald back to there, and they said, if you want what we've got. And I said, fuck no. I said, I'd be willing to go to any lake not to catch that, whatever it is. I quit drinking for the next 2 years. I went through two more treatments strung out on heroin, but I was sober. Got out of treatment, doing it my way, you know, no sponsor, no meetings, you know, going to therapist once a week, and hanging out in the bars and drinking Coca-Colas and showing you how cool I was that I didn't have to use, and I relapsed. Duh. Right? I didn't have a re to lapse from, right? I called a treatment center. I said, I think I need a refresher course. The first time didn't take. They're kind of like the fellowship, you know. They said, we love you. Keep coming back. That'll be $10,000. Oh, I had to go through three treatment centers and spend $30,000 to find out that the meetings were free. So here I am in my second treatment. It's been 2 weeks, so I'm well, right? Met a girl in there for drug addiction and other symptoms. I found out what the other symptoms were. You know, it's one thing when you're like 12 or 13 and your parents come in the bathroom and they catch you naked playing with yourself, but when you're 27 years old and you get caught naked with a girl in treatment and you got to go to group and apologize. I'm sorry I threatened her sobriety. We'll sit on other sides of the couch. Can I stay? Selfless service, right? Not. So I made it out of that treatment center for 30, 60, I don't know, 90 days, you know? And I picked up again. And it was always bullshit, you know? It was just something innocuous. It wasn't no big deal. I wasn't sticking a spike in my arm. It wasn't, you know, it was just a joint. It was a joint. It's just a joint. And that, you know, set me on another run. And the things they were telling me in this treatment center had already taken hold, but I just wasn't becoming aware of them. They said that I had a disease and that it was chronic, that once I got it, it never went away, that it was progressive, that over a long period of time, it was going to get worse and worse and worse, and that it was fatal. And my best friend died at age 17. He was a concert violinist. He was going to Juilliard in New York City, and he overdosed on methadone and died. And he used to write sonatas. He was brilliant. and none of them will ever be heard. And I went up to New York to get my son for the summer because I'd lost my son, and I'd lost my car, and I'd lost my comic book store, and I'd lost, and I'd lost, and I'd lost. And my wife was up in Boston, and she was going to bring him down to give him to me, and we were going to my brother's high school graduation, and I got up there first. And it was nothing, you know, to pull a little bill out of mom's pocketbook, right? First National Bank of Mom, right? No penalty for any withdrawal, right? And go in the city and do what I always did, and I'm just going to do one, which turned into five, which turned into 10, and it turned into me nodding out in the front row of my brother's high school graduation. And my wife, who'd been to some of these classes and learned a little bit, you know, she said, she pulled me aside at 11 o'clock and said, you know what, I'm tired, you know, you can't have your son for the summer. I said, well, I can't. She said, no, you're using. And you know what, I'm tired of telling them. Shit, I haven't even said fuck yet, and they're leaving. Come back. He said, you know, I'm tired of telling them. You're going to tell them. So at 11 o'clock at night, I had to tell this five-year-old boy that he couldn't spend the summer with his dad. And it must be his sponsor. Okay, we'll wait. That I couldn't spend the summer with him. And this little kid looks up to me. He says, well, why, Daddy? I said, you can't. He said, well, why? I said, because I'm sick, and I'm doing drugs, and it's not your fault. I'm sorry. And he went and cried to his mom, and I went to the bathroom to get off. And I wandered back to Virginia, and I'd gotten a relationship with a married woman, and her husband taught at the college, and we did the same drugs, and the guy went to D.C. for the weekend, and she said, come on over. So I came on over. And we were having a grand old time, and the guy decided to hitchhike home. 2.5 hours. Got back to Virginia, got to this big hill, climbed this huge hill, glad to be home, opened the door, up the stairs, opened the door to the fine sight of me doing it to his wife. And I was a friend. He said, get out! I got out. Right. And I went out back and I sat down in my car and I had all those feelings we have at the bottom. I felt ashamed. I felt embarrassed. I felt disgusted with myself. I called my therapist. I said, I think I need some help. He said, well, the treatment center won't take you. We only have one. I hung up the phone. And I remembered a little while later there was some deal at the local mental health. Of course, it was 6 blocks from my house, right? It's the old adage, when the pupil's ready, the teacher will appear, right? And God will move you to the places you need to be, and he's going to put you to the people that you need to be around. And I walked into this counselor's office, and the name was Martin, and the first thing out of his mouth, he said, you know Wes? I said, yeah. He's my dealer. I said, well, I sent Wes to treatment at the beach, and he's got 6 months clean. I said, I wonder why the dope was short. So they sent me to the beach. 3 hours across the state of Virginia, this little hole-in-the-wall treatment center in Hampton, Virginia. I walked into that treatment center on September 5th of 1981. I immediately noticed a serious architectural defect in the planning of the building. I wanted to let them know right away. There was no doorknob on my side of the door. They put me in this little metal cage detox they had. It used to be the psych ward, so it was like where the crazy people, and they laid me on this bed with like a light bulb with the chicken wire on it and slammed this metal door, and three-time loser, man. I felt like shit, right? I was in there 3 or 4 days, twitching and growling in my blue pajamas, right? And some folks that were well, they came down the hall to get me, and they said the words that were going to change my life. They said, would you like to go to an NA meeting? And I said, yeah. See, some folks from Virginia Beach were bringing it over. They were doing H&I. I'm clean today through H&I. You know? And I walked down to that treatment center room and looked around, and it looked just like us, right? Well, there was a lot more bikers, but... Right? Now, I was wearing blue pajamas, right? I weighed 100 pounds less than I do today, right? My skin was yellow. My hair was matted up. My tooth was chipped in half where I'd bitten a fork and just crumbled. And when I sat down in that meeting, I knew that the women were checking me out. Regular stud muffin. See, my world was so crazy, I had to build a world around me that I could feel comfortable in, right? And I sat down and they read out a little white book, right? That's all we had, a little white book. And they said, "We live to use and use to live." I said, "Yeah, you know." And, I remember I was in treatment in 21 days. They had an NA speaker meeting, you know, one of these speaker meetings. And they had this guy get up and, he was rough. I mean, a motorcycle, chained down to his nuts and everything. I was in blue pajamas, right? "You want a piece of me?" I was scared to death of this guy, right? And, he was like, he told the most horrible war story you've ever heard, because that's what we had back then, right? The AA people used to say, "Go to NA and talk about drugs." Okay. But, we had like little recovery, right? So this guy got up and he told this story about being in and out of 12 treatment centers and state psychiatric hospitals. Been in and out of prison. He had 40 white chips. That's an outfit, like a belt, a choker. This guy had tried to get clean 40 times. And after he gave his talk, he sat back down, and at the end of the meeting, they called him back up, and they gave him his one-year medallion. I thought, a year, that's forever, right? That son of a bitch is Billy E., and this year he celebrated 22 years clean in Narcotics Anonymous. I got to the end of my treatment stay, and they wanted me to stay in a halfway house for 6 months. Three-time loser. They're right, right? Then I called on my higher power. I don't know if you know, her name's Patty. I called my girlfriend. I said, "I think I should go to the halfway house." She said, "Oh, no, you can't do that. I cry all the way there." I said, "What should I tell them?" She said, "Tell them you made your mind up." So I went back to group. I said, "I've made my mind up." And they weaseled it out of me. They had one of them super groups, my group, the group next door, and all the little doctors, and trying to tell little Kermit to surrender. Here's what I said. They got it out of me. "If I go to the halfway house for 6 months, she'll leave me and my life won't be worth living." Aww. We were married a year later, and 9 months after that, we were annulled, and my life's been great ever since. So much for I thought, right? That's the way I left treatment, right? Everybody told me I was being loaded by nightfall, right? Basically, they were right. Went across the state of Virginia, through Richmond, out towards Charlottesville. I saw a sign that said 7 miles to town, and the disease started talking. And it was loud, "Where can we get some dope? Where can we get some money? What kind of story can we tell the connection?" I'm like, "Shh, she's going to hear you. We're in a Honda." I moved out of my brother's place because he was shooting heroin. I couldn't do that. So I moved in with my best friend who was only dealing cocaine. I made a decision. And I got to this hippie apartment with an empty mattress and an empty room that he'd thrown in there for us. And I laid down with Patty and I started shaking, right? I was right between the rock and the hard place, right? Where I was going to do what I always did when I got uncomfortable, which was use, right? Or do something else. And something inside of me cracked, right? And I turned to Patty and I said, "Patty, all I'm thinking about is how I can get away from you and where can I get some money, and I'm really scared and I don't know how to do this shit." I admitted that I was powerless over my addiction, right? And she said, "There's a meeting tonight. And we can go to that." And, it was the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I'm not going to play games here. And I said, "Okay." And she said, "We can go to my folks and get something to eat." I said, "Okay." And that's what I did. I went to the meeting that night. Now, folks, in 1981, in the mountains of Virginia, they were not thrilled to see drug addicts in their AA meetings, right? I sat down in a meeting with as many people as in this center section, and they all walked around and said, my name's Billy Bob, I'm an alcoholic. My name's Sue, I'm an alcoholic. And I said, my name's Kermit, and I'm a drug addict. And three people said hello. And I didn't care, right? And it was around Robin, went around the room, so it finally got to me, and I said, my name's Kermit, I'm a drug addict, all I'm thinking about is getting high, and I'm really scared, you know. And this redneck was sitting next to me, a guy had a shit-eating grin on his face, he was just smiling, right? He had the answer, right? Just smiling. You won't believe what he says to me. Get this, he says, just don't get high today. I said, run that by me again. You mean till I go to bed? He said, yeah. I said, I wonder why I didn't think of that. And I went to bed that night clean. And I woke up the next morning free. I'm not saying I haven't had a burning desire to use since that day, because I've had some barn burners. But I knew without a shadow of a doubt that I never had to use again the rest of my life, one day at a time in the 12-step meetings. September 6th, I celebrated 20 years clean in Narcotics Anonymous. And that next morning, I made a second surrender, and that was the second half of the first step. It's the one we always miss, right? That my life was none of my business, right? That our lives had become unmanageable, not manageable, right? Right? Every time I managed my life, I ended up in blue pajamas. It got that simple to me. Pick up dope, blue pajamas. No thank you. Pick up dope, white chip. There's a lot of shit that I haven't relapsed on because I don't want to get another one of them motherfucking white chips. I went to every meeting that we had. We had like 8 meetings a week. And this drug counselor, and after about 4 months of going to all these AA meetings, this drug counselor pulled me west aside and he handed us a starter kit and said, why don't you go start one of those NA meetings? I thought, cool, yeah. You know, I loved NA at the beach, right? You know, 5 minutes away. I'm not a good leader, right? I'm not even a good follower. I get lost, right? But this guy gave us a starter kit and we went, you know, wrote letters to the churches, you know, where they had the AA meetings. We're no dummies, right? Let's get our foot in the door somewhere, right? We sent out 40 letters, right, to the different treatment centers, churches, right? And we get these letters back from these churches, and you could read between the line, right, and say stuff like, the board of deacons do not feel that it would be prudent at this time, right? You see right between the line, to have a bunch of drug-shooting junkies in our basement and give you a key. Are you crazy? Sincerely, Reverend so-and-so, right? We got one letter back from this little Cherry Avenue church, right? The guy said, yeah, we'd love to have you come and talk to us about NA. And me and Wes, this tall brother, we got dressed up in suits. It's a program of attraction, right? And we went to give this guy our talk, right? And, you know, told him about we have this 12-step program based on the tenets of alcoholics, blah, 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 blah. And the guy gave us a key. And I was on fire, right? I was the committee, right? I was the literature committee, the PI committee, the phone was at my house, right? I was chairman of G&I, guilt and intimidation. It's my favorite committee. I see we have some local chapter presidents up here, right? I went around handing out flyers for our NA meeting, right? Send addicts to NA, or one, right? And I dropped one off at the University Hospital. I dropped it off at the radio station. And about a week before the first meeting, I got a call from the UVA Hospital, and they said, you know, we've got this 14-year-old girl. She's on our 6th-floor psych ward. She's been eating speed and trying to commit suicide. We don't know what to do with her anymore. Would you come and talk to her? I was a big guru with 4 months. What the hell do I know, right? I said, okay, you know. I don't know anything about 12-step call to people. You know, I just showed up. I was the committee, right? And I went to this meeting, right? And they gave us a little room with two chairs, and we sat down. And now, when you have like 12, 13 years of using and 4 months of recovery, what are you going to talk about, right? So for about an hour and a half, I told this poor girl every rotten, scummy, disgusting thing I'd ever done in my entire life. And in the last 5 minutes, I said, and I have 4 months clean, and I go to NA. And she looked at me and went, okay. She was nodding in all the appropriate places, going, yep, me too, me too, me too. And, you know, they let her out, and God bless her mom, trusted us, and get her to bring her to the meetings. Her name was Jennifer, and she was having trouble with one day at a time, you know. She'd go for a few days and eat some speed, and go for a few days and eat some speed. And after one of the meetings one night, somebody was giving her a ride and said, well, Jennifer, instead of staying clean just for today, why don't you not use from tonight's meeting till tomorrow night's meeting? And she looked at the guy and said, I wonder why I didn't think of that. And we saw Jennifer at the Virginia Convention this last January, and she just celebrated 20 years clean in Narcotics Anonymous. We didn't have literature, because I was the literature committee. I had a who, what, how, why pamphlet, and I copied it 100 times. That was our literature for like 4 months, right? What we had was the therapeutic value of one addict helping another. It was without parallel, right? We had each other, you know? And NA was small, you know? NA as we know it, it wasn't there, right? Our area, this guy Larry North called me up. He's passed away. I can say his last name. He's the old man, you know. We called him the old man. And if you don't know who Larry North is, when you leave this convention, I want you to go to your grand sponsor's house and slap him in the face. Because Larry probably carried the message to him, right? Larry would show up in this beat-up old van full of newcomers. It was like the circus, right? You'd open it up and newcomers would bubble out. And he called me up. He said, hi, my name's Larry. He said, your group's going to need to elect a GSR. I said, oh, I can do that. So I elected myself GSR. He said, you're in the Blue Ridge area. I said, great, what the hell's that? He explained to me the Blue Ridge area was a meeting in Charlottesville, a meeting in Waynesboro, a meeting in Harrisonburg, 2 meetings in Winchester, and 1 meeting in Roanoke. Everything west of the city of Richmond. And Larry taught me about NA. He taught me about NA service, right? And he used to come by and get me, and he'd say, we're going somewhere. And I learned to say, okay, right? Larry'd say, we're going, you know, to Yorktown. I'd say, okay. And he'd come by and get me. Because I learned that whenever I went anywhere with Larry, I would have a meeting on the way there. We'd meet cool people like you guys. And then we'd have a meeting on the way back. And I'd always grow from it. I moved down to Norfolk to get my wife away from her alcoholic father, right? And to work in treatment. 1 year wonder, work in treatment. I'm recovery man. I work in treatment. I have the keys to the van. Oh, it's so easy to look cool when you got stand next to somebody who's puking on his shoes, right? Keep coming back, buddy. Someday you'll have quality recovery like I do. My sponsor dragged me out of that shit, right? He said, when you have 9 or 10 years clean and you've worked on all your issues, he said, then you can go back in there and work, right? So Larry calls me up. He said, we're going to a convention. I said, great. I said, where? He said, Georgia. Georgia? 900 miles. I said, okay, right? And he picked me up at midnight. We met in Richmond, a bunch of people, and we drove to Georgia, and it's like 2 a.m. Now, this van, right, has got a wheel, right, where you can go all the way here and all the way there, and you're still going straight down the road, right? And it's 2 in the morning. There's a redneck cop behind me. It's pouring rain, and I'm just this little Jewish kid from New York going, oh, God, get us to Georgia, please, please. I was terrified. We got down to Georgia, and it was a time of change, man. They were handing out this little white floppy thing. It was an approval form for something called the Basic Text of Narcotics Anonymous, right? And they were talking the stuff out in the hallway about only going to NA for your recovery. Man, what an idea, right? And, oh, man, they had a beach ball meeting, you know, on Friday night where they take a beach ball and they throw it out, and anybody who catches it comes up to the mic. And this guy in the back from Michigan came up, and he'd been there a year, so he heard all the cool shit, right? He says, I didn't hear much last year, but I heard work the steps or die, motherfucker. And I thought, these must be real drug addicts, right? Because nobody's talking about the steps at home, because I'm in charge and I ain't worked any, right? And this guy, Motorcycle Ed, got up, and he got up to the microphone. He said, you know what I like about this convention? It's a Narcotics Anonymous convention with Narcotics Anonymous speakers. See, that was a novel idea back then. And they had a speaker on Saturday night, right? And he told jokes and he laughed. And I sat there, you know, with my little 2 years, and I thought, that's what I want to be, a circuit speaker for Narcotics Anonymous. In the last 2 years, I've spoken in Narcotics Anonymous conventions in Israel, Athens, Greece, Hawaii, Miami, in California, Missouri, Michigan, Tennessee, Texas. Dreams come true in recovery, baby. You know, dreams come true. And I was riding back with Larry after the thing, and I said, man, Larry, this was incredible. This was the greatest thing that ever happened to me. I said, how could I ever repay you? He went, ugh. Payback's a bitch. I thought, oh shit, here it comes, right? He says, you have to do this for others and often. And you know, I've been doing that for the last 18 years and I still haven't paid Larry back. I went to this was a time of first conventions, right? So it was like, you know, New York, okay, and we'd all run to New York for Freedom One. You know, it was like Tennessee, okay, and we'd all run to Tennessee, right? And we went to Tennessee, and I learned how to be cool, right? If you want to be cool at a convention, you go around to each room, and you put your hand up and get on the microphone. Doesn't care if you have shit to say. You just put your hand up, right? Then you can be a sick, self-centered two-year wonder, right? The end of this convention, this little guy from Memphis comes up to me, Joseph, and he says, smiles. He's a friend of Larry's. He said, you know, you must have talked on every one of them tapes. I thought, who is this asshole, right? He says, you know, I heard you identifying yourself as clean and sober. I said, yeah, you know, I'm physically clean from drugs and emotionally, spiritually sober. He said, you know, I looked up the dictionary definition of the word sober, and it means somber, serious, moderate, and not drunk. He said, I can't afford to limit my recovery in those terms. He said, I looked up the dictionary definition of the word clean, and it means free from dirt and disease. Yeah. And he said, when I came here, I was a dirty and diseased guy. He said, I go to NA not only to get physically clean, but emotionally clean, spiritually clean, clean on the inside. He said, you know, where do you find your recovery? I said, well, you know, I go to the NA meetings that we have, but I work in treatment. So, you know, I go to AA in the evening. He said, you know, all my life I never made a commitment anywhere. He said, you know, if I didn't like this group of kids, I'd go to that one. If I didn't like this school, I'd go to this one. He said, I never made a commitment and stuck it out. He said, you need to decide where you need to recover and make a decision. He said, now, if they need a speaker for AA, would you be missed? I said, they got 100 people. He said, well, what if they need to chair the NA meeting? What about that? And he said, well, there's only 8 of us. He said, well, you need to decide where you can best be of service and get off the fence and make a decision. And when the service arguments get difficult, you can't take your ball and go home. You got to stick it out and grow up, right? And I thought, you know, I said to him, thanks for sharing, buddy. Got the hell away from that guy, right? Went back home, right to the Easy Does It Club. Tell me I can't go somewhere, right? Sat down in this meeting and they picked on me. I don't know, the topic was humility or something like that. One of my favorites, right? Let's have a hand for my humility. And I said something, you know, my name's Kermit, I'm an addict. And at the end of the meeting, this old drunk stops up to me and he says, we don't talk about drugs in here.
I said, all right, buddy, you know. And he marched out the door. Guess where I was the next day? Tell me I can't be somewhere. And I'm sitting in this little meeting and pissed off, right? This little voice comes in the back of my head. What are you doing here? And I thought, resentment? And the little voice said, is that any reason to attend a 12-step fellowship? And I said, no. And I got up out of that noon meeting in 1983 in Norfolk, Virginia, and I made a commitment to only go to Narcotics Anonymous for my recovery. And the next time, yeah. And the next time I saw that jerk from Memphis, I asked him to be my sponsor. Because I wanted what he had. Because he talked to me about integrity. He talked to me about putting my money where my mouth is, right? You know, I'm going to back up. I had about 9 months clean, right? No sponsor. And I figured with 9 months clean and no sponsor, I should be on step three, right? This is Sunday morning. We might want to talk about God here, right? And so I decided I was going to do the third step, right? And this was how I figured it out. What I was going to do is I was going to look for God's will in everything, right? Like, if I got to a red light, I'd go, okay, this must be God's will because there's going to be an accident ahead, right? A napkin would fall off a table. It's a sign from God. But it's a whole deal. Like, you know, if you want to find God, tell my sponsors, you want to know where God is? He's right on the other side of willingness, right? And I was willing. And I got into Patty's car one night. There was a letter there from the sheriff's department, right? I knew they wanted me to come speak. And I opened up this letter, and it was a warrant for my arrest, right? I know it's something that you guys have never done, right? Writing checks, knowing there's no funds in the account. So I opened up this letter and I read it and I was mad as hell, right? And I took this letter and I held it up and I said, all right, God, what do you want me to do about this one? And the Beatles song, Let It Be, came on the radio. Speaking words of wisdom, let it be. I thought, shit, I've heard from the Almighty, Paul McCartney. So I decided I was going to let go and let God, right? I was going to turn this problem over to God, and I'm going to act as if he's got it already taken care of. And I'm not going to worry about it, you know? I'm going to let go until the day of court, right? And then I was a nervous wreck, right? And I went down to court, right? I like what Richard Pryor says. I went there for justice, and that's what I found. Just us. When I go to court, I want to go with a stack of white books, right? 30 days, have a white book. Trunk and disorder, have a white book, right? I get to this courtroom, right, and I'm sitting in the back where all the guilty people sit, right? And, you know, because it's the judge, right? You know the judge. The one who said, if I see you here again in my court, I'm going to try you to the fullest extent of that judge, right? And they call my name, and I'm doing the long walk. I'm dressed in a suit. I got the literature under my arm, and I'm, God grant me straight, God grant me straight. And I get up to the front, and the judge goes, Mr. Osmond, he said, you want to tell us something about this check? And I said, well, Your Honor, he said, hold it. And he calls the lawyer over for the supermarket chain. He says, counselor, he said, do you recognize this check's a year old? And the lawyer said, well, yes, Your Honor. He said, well, you can't prosecute this man for a criminal case that's a check that's a year old. He said, well, I can't. He said, no. He said, now you can prosecute him in a civil suit and get your money back. He said, unless, Mr. Osmond, you're here to pay the money you owe. What do you think I said? Yes, Your Honor, I'm here to pay the money. He said, pay the man $32, case dismissed. I didn't get to open my mouth, right? If I'd have opened my mouth, I'd have screwed the whole deal because I was ready to admit everything, right? Yes, Your Honor, I did break into that cigarette machine with David Reichel when we were 12 years old. You know, when you're a newcomer, you're willing, right? God didn't want that. You know, he just wanted willingness, you know. And honey, I've had a deep faith in the God of my understanding since that day. And when the music plays, I listen, right? I've been given a wonderful life. A wonderful life, you know? You know that movie, It's a Wonderful Life? Shit, I've already had it, you know? I've been in airplanes where they start shaking and it's, you know, is this the big one? And I say,
thank you, God. Thank you, God. Because if I got nothing else but today and what I've had so far, I am fully blessed, you know, and deeply grateful. You know? When I had a year clean, I went to the first Virginia Convention of Narcotics Anonymous, and there was a guy there from Connecticut, and this guy, Danny Sullivan, he's since passed away, and I grabbed him after one of the meetings. It was the end of the convention, and I said, Danny, I got a couple of really good sick ones up in Connecticut. My sister, used an addict, and her husband, he's in jail, he's getting out of a 3-year bid. Would you give him a call, right? What, you know, what does it take to give a call, right? The guy went home, he took 5 minutes of his time, dropped the dime, called my sister. Use an addict, right? Yeah, man, cool. Yeah, man, cool. I know my brother's in NA. Yeah, cool. Yeah, let me take your number. We're not going to go down to the Avenue anymore. We're going to send someone else. That should have worked for about an hour, right? Screw that. Let's go get the dope, right? Michael gets out of prison that week, right? About a day later, he goes down. And he says, screw it, and goes down to COP. And it was a sting, and they busted him. And they took him back to prison where my sister, the prison wife, had been bringing the dope in for 3 years. And she couldn't do it anymore, you know. And she called that guy Danny Sullivan, and he got her to a meeting. And she kicked in her bathtub. And this January, she sent me an email. And it said, 19, 19, 19, 19. She had celebrated 19 years clean in Narcotics Anonymous. My stepmother's got 15 years clean. My brother's got 10 years clean, and my two sisters in the last 4 months have both picked up white chips. You know? You know, I told you I left Virginia, you know, I was like, in my 11th year clean, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these 12 steps, I had a codependent meltdown, I lost my house, my wife, my business, $500,000, and ended up owing the IRS $150,000. Newcomers, keep coming back, it gets better. And all this pain drove me to go and deal with my childhood. Here's our family theme song. Doodly-doo. Right? You look up dysfunctional in the dictionary, there's a picture of my family smiling. You know, I had a workaholic father lawyer who disappeared at a really early age, fun-loving, fun guy, cigar-smoking, big, heavy-set guy, never there. Had a mother who's a depressive and let the house go to hell, and we lived in the richest suburb in America. And she let the dogs and cats shit and piss all over the house, and nobody cleaned it up. The dog fell in the swimming pool, which had been empty for 10 years, and the dog died, and my mother left it there for a year. And if you don't think I felt less than and inferior all my life, you know, I got high with my father and my stepmother the first time at age 13, blowing doobies back from private school, and my stepmother and I bonded, and she was my ace in the hole, right? She was the one that was in my corner. She was the one that was got my back door, right? I had a little baby brother, 5-year-old boy, love of our life, smiling, happy, happy, smiling all the time, blonde hair, little 5-year-old boy. We all loved him. And he was in the Bronx. Mom had an apartment in Riverdale, and he was sitting up on the windowsill and heard a siren. He wanted to hear what it was, see what it was, and he leaned against the screen and it fell out and he dropped 13 floors and died. And my stepmother, my light, picked up a bottle and drank a fifth a day for the next 20 years until it killed her. Not before molesting me when I was 15. And my former wife, you know her, the plaintiff. My ex-wife, when we would go to our family functions, we'd leave, she'd go, it's a miracle you've come this far coming from this. You know? My best friend Ned is dead at age 17. My other running partner died from hepatitis C and alcoholism.
7-8 years ago. My brother, you know, who was my bud, we got in and out of the shits together. And I got clean and tried to push recovery on him, and he didn't want it, and then he wanted it, and he didn't want it. Well, on one of his didn't wants, he picked up the AIDS virus, and 7 years ago we buried him. You know? All the work that I did in my 11th, 12th year, when God said I was ready, he brought a woman into my life that's beyond my wildest dreams, you know? And this woman, right after my world collapsed, hers began to collapse. Her name is Jamise, and she was in Baltimore, right? And she was going to meetings. Her marriage of 10 years had crumbled. Her mother, she was an only child, and her mother, who was her rock, her mother was dying of cancer. And she would go to meetings and cry and go home and cry every day, all day. And she decided to treat herself like a newcomer and just go to meetings and just go to meetings and take suggestions and ask people for hugs and say, can I lean on you at the meeting? And she was sitting in the meeting one night after the meeting talking to this guy, Omar. And she said, you know, Omar, I don't know. You know, I don't know if God has some plan for me or not. And Omar looked at her and said, Jamise, there's no maybe about it. God most certainly has a plan for you, and it's better than any plan you could ever believe in. And she hung on to that, you know. She hung on to those words. She would sit at home and go, you know, God, if you got some plan for me, you better fucking show it to me pretty quick, because I don't know if I could take much more. And I came down to Virginia for a retreat, and I spoke Sunday morning, and I was happy a year later after my divorce. And she said, you know, I want to know how you get from miserable to happy in a year. And I said, well, here's my card. Page me. And we spent 4 months, she just paging me and me calling her back, one addict helping another. There was nothing there. You know, nothing. Just one addict helping another. And, you know, she said something about I could stop in whenever I came down. And I said this to my sponsee, Rich, up here in the front row. And he said, what do you mean, man? Get down there. I said, you think? He said, yeah. So I took a risk. You want to find love? You want to find happiness? You want to find prosperity? Take a risk, you know? And I went down to Baltimore, and we had 3 days of the wildest time you've ever had. The end of this weekend, I started telling her I wanted to marry her, right? I said, I want to marry you, baby, you know? And, you know, you tell that to NA people, you know, that I knew that, you know, I knew from that day on that she was the love of my life. That's what I call her, the love of my life. And when you tell the NA committee, they go, oh, no, you can't do that. You got to know her for 6 months. Find out who she really is. When God touches two people's hearts like ours were touched, there's no maybe about it. You know? We moved in three months later, and about 2 years ago, we were married. We've been together for 7 years. She's still the love of my life. We've traveled the world speaking at Narcotics Anonymous conventions. You know, a year ago I spoke in Palm Springs, California, and it was our 2-year anniversary, and we took a couple extra days and went to San Diego, and we were staying at this hotel on the bay, and they had this deal where you could rent a yacht, right? You know, it was like $200. I was like, shit, it's our anniversary. I got to do something really cool, right? So I rented this yacht, right? At dinner time, and I took her out on the dock, and you know, we're dancing on this dock. They had some guy playing music. She said, well, is this the surprise? I said, yeah, baby, I paid the guy to play music so we could dance on the dock. And the captain comes up. He says, ready to board, sir? And I went, absolutely. She said, you rented the yacht. I said, yep. And we got on this yacht at sunset in San Diego Harbor. We're going out. They were going to do fireworks on the all over the water. And they didn't have many tapes in there. They had Sinatra, right? So we put Sinatra in, and she's sitting up in the wheelhouse, and I'm standing on the front of this yacht with the love of my life, getting ready to talk to 4,000 people at a Narcotics Anonymous convention in Palm Springs, right? And Frank's singing, that's life. Shot down in March and back up in May, right? That's life. Don't stop 5 minutes before the miracle, you know? That's the message here. If I'd have gotten loaded when I had that year of depression and all that shit happening and my world crumbling, I'd have missed the whole damn thing. But instead, I didn't get high, right? Everything I have, my love of my life, my son, the well-being of my family, the God of my understanding, everything I have I owe to the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. And I do not have the heart to say no when somebody asks me to do something for NA. You know, I heard some guy talking to another at the history meeting. He was like, yeah, you know, it's not one of them motherfuckers that just flies somewhere to speak, you know, and then flies home, you know. You know, a girl came up to me, a sister came to me from D.C. She says, we got a Wednesday night meeting in D.C. I said, cool, I'll be in Virginia in 3 weeks. You call me. I'll come up on Wednesday night and speak at your home group. She said, you mean it? I said, of course I mean it. Of course I mean it. Of course I mean it. I will go to the ends of the earth to carry this message, you know, and I would never be able to repay one-tenth of what was given to me. I'm going to close with a song. I hope you're open-minded. I heard it at that convention in Georgia in 1983, and it was written by a woman from Nashville, and it was so powerful. And I said, Gail, I said, could I use that song in my talk? And she said, oh, yeah. She said, it's a gift from God. Pass it on. And it sums up everything that I believe about Narcotics Anonymous. It's called The Last Time I Saw Michael. Someone introduced us somewhere, I don't remember now. I guess we started talking, but I don't know what about. Michael was from Florida, by way of NYC. And from that moment on, he became a friend to me. Well, I always used to see him, and sometimes we'd drop by. And every time he'd be alone, just trying to get high. The high was never high enough. He tried day after day, and helplessly I watched his spirit simply slip away. God, he used to sit and brag the money and the dope he had, but I just can't forget how sad Michael looked to me. Well, I read the evening papers, they called it heart attack, but I know damn full and well he overdosed on smack. So now the party's over, they've gone and rented out his space. I never will quite forget the look on Michael's face. God, he used to sit and brag the money and the dope he had, but I just can't forget how sad Michael looked to me. Well, I'd like to say in closing, the story's sad but true, and somewhere lives a Michael in me and all of you, and I am deeply grateful for what I have today, because I would be where he is if it wasn't for NA. Thanks.
Thanks, everyone. We have a nice way to close.